Jason there.
And mow my grass. So how many of you, this is your first time to a city council hearing? Raise your hand. Okay. So to kill a little time here before we get started, there's no clapping in city council. If you want to make sure that we know that you agree with something and you're not signed up to testify, you can do this. Jazz hands.
With all fingers extended.
All fingers extended. So you do this.
Very good.
This means that you like what it's in lieu of. It's a substitute for clapping. And what else? No signs.
No throwing.
No throwing. Anything. No spitting. Just the base. If you didn't like it, then I guess you can do this. Yeah. No hitting each other.
We've never had that happen before.
Yeah, that's never happened.
That's never happened before.
Never. Yeah. No, that happens a fair amount here. Almost all the issues that come before the city council are contentious. So occasionally we get issues that everyone in the room loves, but that doesn't happen very often.
Not too often.
If it's made it to us, land use issues, it means that there's been disagreement through a number of different steps making its way to us. I guess the only other thing I could say is that because it's a quasi-judicial process that you're required to keep your comments to the nature of the appeal. And so if I interrupt you during your presentation or the city attorney interrupts you or even the opposing side, depending on which side you're on, they can interrupt you if you stray from what is before us. So just prepare you for that. Do you want to do it now? Or wait till we read? Wait till we gavel in? He's going to make a statement about Sandy Dietrich.
Yeah. Where's he at?
There's going to be a gathering. We don't know yet what the funeral.
I don't know if that was details.
Does Matt know? It's okay. So. Where is that here? Is there a specific place for it? Okay. It's okay. Thank you for your patience. The Portland City Council will now come to order. Sue, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten. Potter.
Commissioner Saltzman has some special words for us today.
Thank you, Mr. President. As some of you may be aware, Sandy Diedrich, a Parks and Recreation Bureau employee, passed away yesterday morning at Good Samaritan Hospital. She was the creator of the No Ivy League, and we actually have this summer's crew of the No Ivy League in the back of the chambers here today. A passionate protector of our parks and natural areas, and a tenacious advocate for the young people of our city. Sandy's active mind, creativity, and keen sense of humor will be profoundly missed. Her legacy remains in all of the people, especially the youth that she touched, the programs she nurtured, and the passion she ignited. As I said, we have some of these youth with us today in council. Thank you for your efforts in fighting invasive species in our natural areas. Our thoughts and prayers are with Sandy's family as they adjust to this loss, and I ask that in honor of Sandy's contributions, take some time this weekend and attack some ivy or another invasive plant in your yard or in your neighborhood. Her legacy will live on through all the people she has touched. Thank you, Sandy.
If we could have a, there you go. She was a great person and an inspiration to, I know, many of us in what it means to be a citizen of the city of Portland, and let's just have a few minutes of silence. Thank you. All right, Sue, would you please call the, would you please read the agenda item and agenda number and description?
Item 1015, appeal of Jeremy Osterholm, applicant, against the hearing officer's decision to deny a 19-lot subdivision and design review for 19 attached row houses at Southeast Lafayette Street, east of Southeast 74th Avenue.
The city attorney now will make some procedural announcements. At the beginning of this hearing, these announcements are required by state law and describe the way that the hearing will be conducted, including the kind of hearing, the order of testimony, and the scope of testimony.
Thank you, Commissioner Adams. I have several announcements to make at the beginning today. First, as to the kind of hearing we're holding, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. This hearing is designed only to decide if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. Second, as to the order of testimony, we'll begin with a staff report by Nazar Slim from the Bureau of Development Services for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present the appellant's case. In today's hearing, the appellant is also the applicant. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. Next, the principal opponent will have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. If there is no principal opponent, the council will move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal after supporters of the appeal conclude their testimony. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. Finally, I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be speaking to City Council today. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing, which means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, the City Council will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that's not in the record, you may object to that argument. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to the council's consideration of that issue. I'd like to make one note for the council, which has to do with the 120-day time limit. The 120th day will expire, or the 120th day is August 30th, 2 weeks from today. So depending on where we are at the conclusion of this hearing, we may need to request the applicant to grant an extension of time if there's a need for additional time to bring back findings or to continue the hearing. And I just wanted to flag that so you're aware.
Thank you, Catherine. We now have a few other preliminary matters to go through before we open the public hearing. First is regarding potential conflicts of interest. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest? Hearing none. Do any members of the council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside this hearing to disclose?
I do, actually. Probably about 3 weeks ago at the Gresham Eagles, I was approached by a woman who lives in the neighborhood, and she expressed her concerns against this development.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. Are there any members of council that have questions or other preliminary matters that need to be addressed before we begin the hearing? Hearing none, we will begin with the staff report by the Bureau of Development Services that will last for approximately 10 minutes. And again, following the staff report, the City Council will then hear from interested persons in the fall, starting with the appellant. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Bizarre Slim. I'm with the Land Division section of BDS. With me is Eric Engstrom, supervisor of that section, and Kurt Kruger with Development Services, Bureau of Transportation. With your permission, I'll begin. As stated, the purpose of the hearing here today is to consider an appeal of the hearings officer's decision to deny a 19-lot subdivision with a public street.
Oh, have you started your PowerPoint?
Yeah, my screen actually shows the slide, and apparently it's...
Yeah, we're not getting that. There we go.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm actually just going to read kind of the highlights, too, just to keep it brief, because this stuff is kind of up on the screen there. Summary of the proposal, highlights are, it is a proposal for a 19-lot subdivision. It does include a new public street, and there, the density and development with the subdivision utilizes the AO overlay. There's also a design review that was done concurrently to take advantage of that AO overlay. Approval criteria in general are land divisions and residential and open space zones, approval criteria for right-of-way, and approval criteria for design review. Summary of the decision was a denial due to the following criteria not being satisfied, and that was approval criteria for the right-of-way, specifically turnarounds, section 33.654.120.c.3.c. Zoning map of the site, and here's the site prior to the land division. Existing conditions map. And here's some photos at various angles. The arrows denote the angle in which the picture was taken onto the site. Here's the original proposal, the site map of the land division, and the way the lots were configured along with the street that was proposed. In this case, it's a public through street. This is just a plan of the tree preservation plan. Site map again. This is still the same configuration. This just shows the utility layout up as well as the tree preservation plan altogether. This is a typical elevation of one of the structures that the applicant is proposing to build. Again, these structures, or the design of these structures, did go through design review, And again, this represents just a typical elevation. There are actually a variety, I believe, three different variety types concerning just the two-unit row houses. So there is variation throughout the subdivision. And again, here's another zoning map showing the proposed through street. And here's basically this slide is to demonstrate the primary issue that's before us here. And I'm going to hand this over to Eric Engstrom.
Thank you, Nizar. As Nizar mentioned, the issue around this case revolves around the turnaround at the end of the street. The street is intended to be a through street that will eventually go through the block, but because this site doesn't connect through the block, it will temporarily terminate on this site. And depending on when and how the lots beyond this site redevelop in the future, it will eventually continue. The issue was that we've shown three options here kind of conceptually, one with that street just terminating without any kind of turnaround, the middle option being constructing some kind of temporary turnaround, usually off to the side of the street, either in conjunction with a driveway or separately, and then the third option being actually building a permanent cul-de-sac that would, even though the street is continuing eventually, that would serve in the interim. The hearings officer reached the conclusion that a permanent turnaround was required in all cases in this kind of situation. The issue of this appeal in part revolves around how you would interpret the code that discusses turnarounds. And there's going to be kind of two issues that I'm going to ask you to kind of separate out. One is the abstract issue, and then the other is as applied to this particular site. The hearings officer concluded that the code should be read to require a permanent turnaround in all cases of this nature. The bureaus disagreed with that position. That is a slightly separate issue from whether a turnaround and what kind of a turnaround is appropriate in this particular case. So I just want to keep that in mind.
So you're saying council should consider whether a turnaround is necessary and or required, and then what kind of turnaround is required?
Yeah, and whether or not this is a rule that should apply to all cases like this, or whether you're making that decision on some specifics related to this site, and that has to do with how we might interpret this code in the future. Another thing I'm going to ask is that whenever we're talking about a street that is intended to continue in the future, but we're not exactly sure when and where it's going to go, you have to keep in mind that the city's street grid develops over a pretty long time frame, and we're not making this decision based on whether the adjacent property is likely to develop next week. It could be 50 years. It could be 10 years.
Is there anything in a practical or zoning way that or land use out of a land use perspective that would prevent the street from or prevent development along where the street connection would occur?
The lots beyond where this temporary street and or where the temporary termination is are dividable under the present day zoning, so they conceivably will redevelop, and that's what we're planning for. Whether or not they actually happen immediately is unknown. So having set that context, I want to turn it over to Kurt Kruger to talk about what the applicant is proposing as to resolve this issue.
Good afternoon, Office of Transportation, Kurt Kruger. Just briefly to elaborate a little on Eric's comments, these turnarounds have been a little challenging for us, temporary in nature. In the past, we've had concrete areas placed that effectively look like a driveway along developments that can be used for turnaround. They become a parking challenge. People don't realize that that's intended for a turnaround purpose, so they actually get plugged up being parked on. And then the other challenge is in the future when, say, the street were to extend and develop further, who we put the burden of removing that turnaround on. So we've had some challenges on permanent-looking turnarounds on these streets that are intended to extend in the future. With that said, we've been working with the applicant to consider some design options, some different site layouts that would address the turnaround issue at stake here. And most of our concern we've heard is from Portland Disposal Garbage Company, in that a vehicle comes down and has sufficient room to make the turnaround and get out of the street. We've also worked with the Fire Bureau at this location. this turnaround or no turnaround does not meet Fire Bureau requirements, so there is a requirement to sprinkle a certain number of houses. And we have a representative from Portland Fire Bureau if we need to discuss that further. But the applicant has proposed, as you can see before you, a 70-foot diameter turnaround that would address the garbage disposal needs. It would still most likely need the sprinkler requirement on a certain number of lots because it's not wide enough for a full fire turnaround. But this does address that need. It would end up as a permanent turnaround, but it also allows for the street to continue in the future.
And what's a normal diameter of a normal turnaround? You said this was 70 feet?
Our city standards are 70 feet for a turnaround. To meet a Fire Bureau turnaround, I think we are looking at somewhere around 90 feet, which is a pretty extensive amount of paving.
What is it, and what is this proposed turnaround?
70 feet.
So why would we agree to a turnaround that the Fire Bureau says is insufficient?
It's a cooperative effort between the Fire Bureau and transportation. We realize that in not all cases can we get a full 90-foot diameter turnaround. In that case, they have a provision to go through a fire code appeal to then put sprinklers on certain houses to deal with.
So the reduced turnaround. You said that there's some cases where we can't do a 90-foot turnaround. What limits us from doing a 90-foot turnaround here?
Physically, I don't think we would be limited. There are a number of design challenges with putting a 90-foot turnaround. Additional asphalt and stormwater runoff could come into play as major design factors, or at the end of the street temporarily with the low point and the stormwater is running to the end of the street. And the larger we make this turnaround, the more stormwater we're going to have to deal with and remove. Additionally, and I'm sure you're going to hear testimony today, the larger we make this turnaround, the farther the houses get pushed away from this cul-de-sac or the turnaround and get pushed further into the rear setbacks and adjacent to neighboring properties. So there was a request to keep the cul-de-sac as narrow as possible to function appropriately for the garbage.
I'm sure you're aware of this, but so that it's just stated publicly, turnarounds aren't just for the purpose of meeting an emergency there. Oftentimes, firefighters can end up on a street on an emergency response and need to turn around quickly to get to a different street.
Correct.
So just having sprinklers there, in my mind, doesn't satisfy the need. There are a number of circumstances beyond house fires and beyond what's happening in that particular neighborhood that requires the larger turnaround.
That's correct.
So I'm just throw that out. I'm concerned about that part.
Anything else?
No, that's it. And with that, I'll just read the last slide here. Basically, your alternatives are to deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer decision, uphold the appeal, thereby overturning the hearings officer decision, and adopt perhaps revised findings. And there's just a note there regarding the 120-day waiver or the period review period.
Any other questions from council for the staff presenters? All right, thank you.
Well, yeah, oh. One question. The
can you leave that drawing last slide up? Just while Commissioner Saltzman is asking a question. Thank you.
The drawing you showed of the 70-foot turnaround. This was proposed after the hearings officer's decision.
Correct.
Yes, I believe it was.
So this is a response to the hearings officer's denial.
It was a response.
Denial.
Right. It was a response. Prior to this configuration, just to note, and I don't know if this got missed, but they do actually have, they did have in place a condition that was recommended that came from Fire Bureau to have the lots basically sprinkled, and that would be lots, I believe, 9 through 15. Yeah, or just the ones that basically are sort of in that are surrounding that sort of turnaround and a little above.
So with this turnaround, these houses you mentioned would be sprinkled?
Yes, everything, basically, package. There's about, I would say, about 10 of the houses there would have fire sprinklers, and that's without the turnaround there, or with the turnaround. That turnaround does not undo that requirement because of the issues that were stated with regards to the maneuverability for fire trucks.
Okay, thanks.
And what was that, if you could go to the slide with the second option where it was more of a chip in the... Keep going back. There were three turnaround types. That middle one, what is that middle one?
That was a temporary turnaround. Initially, that was kind of batted around as a solution, and that was actually discussed with the Fire Bureau, but it wasn't to their satisfaction. They felt that wasn't going to be sufficient enough. There's often those temporary turnarounds don't work so well because it's hard to prevent people from actually occupying that space, and in time of emergency, you've got something there. It's hard to keep the barricade. So they went with the applicant that appealed for the fire sprinkler and was okay for that.
Okay. And just so I wasn't quite clear, did you say that the Fire Bureau did sign off on the 70-foot turnaround?
The Fire Bureau signed off on the street without a turnaround.
Right, without the turnaround and the waiver, rather, and the sprinklers as a condition.
Okay. So option A is what the Fire
Bureau... Yeah, actually, option A is what they had signed off on.
Any other questions from council? Thank you. We'll now hear from the appellant, who will have 10 minutes to present their case. If you could start at the top. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Ken Sandblast. Do you have a mailing address or just my name is okay? Okay. Land use planning with planning resources and working with the appellant, Jeremy Osterholm. I appreciate the staff differentiating out policy and site specific in this case. I think you guys have asked the right questions. I want to focus on those specific issues because I'm going to repeat a little bit and review and then maybe answer a couple of the questions I heard. This project proceeded, as you can see from the slides that you saw, and it got approved. The PDOT approved it as presented with the Straight Street. The fire code appeal was supported to sprinkler these buildings. And what's basically come down to is kind of this policy level of the hearings officer looking for what I would characterize from Commissioner Leonard's comments, function more so than meeting all of the code. We appreciate that. Thus, you see the alternative of a 70-foot cul-de-sac that the staff just talked to you about. We envisioned that this 70-foot cul-de-sac would still have sprinklers in all the buildings so that we're kind of overdoing what was already okay before while also providing the function. I think that none of this came up until this point simply because there are, if you took a look at one of the exhibits that went by quickly and showed some of the surrounding lotting pattern, although not in detail, quite a variety of opportunities for the connectivity in this area. And I think it's, as your staff acknowledged, going to be provided at some point in the future, although it may be in the more distant future. That was covered at the hearings, at the initial hearings officer's public hearing in some detail about just exactly what the policy of connectivity attempts to achieve, what it is. There was a lot of concern expressed about that and what it meant to some of the surrounding property owners. But the point was that this was approved, and I think with the understanding that it would be extended in compliance with all of the codes at that point, including the fire code appeal. Subsequent to that, the hearings officer, as your staff pointed out, focused on what appears to be the garbage truck's ability to turn around. We don't see that necessarily his particular basis is the basis for denial. We appreciate the idea you have to function. Thus, you see the alternative you have in front of you. We expect that we would still provide the sprinklers on those buildings. We would still provide the 70-foot turnaround. I would point out that the 16 houses are actually south. Those were all required to be sprinklered in, so 16 of the 19 homes would have sprinklers in them. The 70-foot versus the 90-foot issue, the 90-foot would do exactly what the neighborhood expressed they did not want, which was decrease the rear yard setbacks. I would just take that opportunity to point out that those setbacks are well in excess of the minimums. They're upwards of 40 feet in the rear yards on some of those lots. And obviously with this 70-foot right-of-way, we're attempting to do two things, not reduce that setback as much as possible, and also minimize the amount of impervious surface that we're creating. This redesign results in storm swales, infiltration-type facilities. Thus, it actually increases that right-of-way a little bit, but still provides 70 feet of a radius on there, which would allow the turnarounds. To a degree, this application, as I think as I tried to point out, is caught a little bit in the policy crossfire here. I understand what connectivity is, and I understand everyone's interest from both my perspective for the future use as well as from their staff's perspective on understanding if this is going to be something that comes up repeatedly, how it's going to be dealt with. PDOT expressed concerns since this hearing, the officer's decision, rightfully so in my opinion, that creating these kinds of turnarounds in these kinds of situations with a strong likelihood of future connectivity results in ongoing maintenance issues for the city and some other things that may not be in the best interest at a policy level. However, I want to point out that that's a little bit different than the specifics of this application, which is what I just addressed. And so we believe in this particular case, the redesign actually it will dedicate right-of-way all the way to the south property line of this site. So it isn't going to prevent this future street from being extended to the south. And if you looked closely at the either the original design or the redesigned or revised design, this street actually has the ability to extend to the east. There's a large property there if and when that ever develops. And so while we're appreciating the policy, I just kind of want to continue to emphasize that on the site specifics of this case, we met the code and we're trying to meet it here by still even providing the sprinkler system in those homes even after providing the turnaround. With that, I would just end with a couple of general remarks. In addition to the connectivity issue that came up at the public hearing, density came up at the public hearing, as well as building design. The density issue, as your staff again quickly showed you, this application does not even approach maximum density of 25. It's in excess of minimum, I think, at 10. It's at 19. And because of the A overlay, building design was involved and design review was included. The density question is, again, more of a policy-level question. On this particular case, we meet the code, and that's pretty clear. The building designs have been reviewed. Subsequent to the hearings officer's decision, at the invitation of the Foster Powell neighborhood, myself and Jeremy went out and met with the land use chair and some of the leadership of the Foster Powell group. We spent about an hour and most of that time reviewed in detail the building designs. At the end of that meeting, in general, there was more information exchanged about specifically what was designed, and most importantly, that the design of the buildings and the materials that are in those buildings is conditioned through the design review approval and can't be changed without going back through the public process. So I would like to believe that was a positive meeting. We got to exchange some information about what appeared to be one of their larger concerns, which was the design of the building and making sure that it represented what they wanted to see in their neighborhood. However, all of those issues actually aren't the basis of the appeal that you have before you today. The basis of the appeal is simply this turnaround issue. So with that, I don't have anything else to add. See if I can answer any of your questions.
Any questions from council? Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from persons who support the appeal. All right. Since there is no one signed up in support of the appeal, we'll now hear for 10 minutes from the principal opponent, 15 minutes? 15 minutes from the principal opponent to address the city council and rebut the appellant's presentation.
Commissioner Adams, I'm not sure there is a principal opponent in this appeal, and if that's the case, then we'll just anybody who opposes can speak for 3 minutes each.
And we'll just go to testimony. Sue.
The first three, please come up. Marjorie Dilworth, Constance Crane, Linda Gertz. They'll be followed by Joe Shapiro, Lisa Moyman, and Johannes Moyman.
So you'll have each have 3 minutes. The buzzer will warn you when you've got 30 seconds left. And please begin your presentation by stating your name.
My name is Marjorie Dilworth, and actually, the largest issue in our neighborhood is the density. The turnaround ties into this, yes, but it is the density. I submitted to the hearing on May 30th a petition that was gathered in the neighborhood, which I believe all of you have received. 95% of the people signing that petition live either on 74th, 76th, or Center and are directly involved by this project. The other 5% are owners who live off property. The only ones who did not sign were either people who did not have sufficient English to speak and understand the issues, or they were away from home. The neighborhood is unified that this is too many units for this small space of land. When you count the houses, there's 19 houses on the east side of 74th. There are 19 houses on the west side of 74th, between Powell and Center. The developer is proposing putting 19 houses on a very small portion of land in the middle of all this. That portion of land is actually approximately 12%. And yet it's going to increase the number of housing units by 40%. Areas that are hidden away like this, it's well known that they do tend to breed crime of one illegal activity of one sort or another. This is an area that the police will not be able to patrol just driving up and down the streets. Extending 75th through to come out someplace is really not an option at this point of time, especially the people who live south of this property are not interested in selling. We like our backyards. We like our privacy. We have gardens. We enjoy that kind of life in the middle of a city, which is very unusual. Portland prides itself on diversity of all kinds of diversity. Let diversity of space be part of what we enjoy. That's part of our lifestyle. We're not against the development. We realize something needs to go in there ultimately, just not that dense. 10, 12, 14 units would be adequate for the space. It would give livability to everyone. One person made the comment that there were, within 70 feet of his backyard, there were going to be six backyards suddenly, where now there is nothing. Normally, he would have had one behind him, another to the side. Row houses or even the skinny houses on little small lots are not a good fit for our neighborhood. We ask that you deny it. Just because you can do something doesn't mean it's the right thing to do for a neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't want to interrupt you, but just for other folks that are contemplating testifying, we cannot, as part of our decision-making here, it's on the whether the street has a turnaround, a cul-de-sac, or something else. We cannot make the decision today based on issues related to density. We are limited by state law to just the issue of the road and the turnaround. So I just want to let anyone else who's contemplating testifying, that is, by state law, we are limited to our decision-making today just about that road. So I appreciate your comments, but we have to move on to the next
one. Can I have my last 20 seconds? It is not just the garbage trucks. There's all the other delivery trucks that come into neighborhoods that ring bells when they back up. We need a proper turnaround. If there must be a development, it needs a proper turnaround.
Thank you. Please say your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Constance Crane. I would like to communicate how I feel about this issue through interpretive dance, or at least I would if I thought it would get somebody's attention.
Have our attention.
Well, you woke me up. I was drifting off there.
Please begin.
I used to be a heavy equipment operator, and I have a lot of respect for how much room it really takes to move big pieces of equipment and large trucks around. And whoever thinks that it's, you know, not that important to get a fire truck back in there is either insane or extremely greedy. I'm like, what are you thinking? I once worked at a movie theater where vandals set off the sprinkler system. People don't seem to realize that water sits in there sometimes for years, getting extremely stagnant. When they go off, the theaters stunk for a long time. They're not as cool as you think they're going to be. What if there's a power outage and the electric pump cannot pump the water through the sprinkler system? What if there's an earthquake and there's an extended power outage? It's like, let's zoom out for the big view here. You need to send this design back to the drawing board for a comprehensive review. It sucks. And if you were going to build something cool here, the people in the neighborhood would be all for it. The design sucks. So please, quasi-judicial guys, try and help us out here. You know, sometimes, like she says, if there's something that can be done technically and legally, it doesn't mean that maybe there's a situation where you need to step in and have real-life human people do a reality check and say, this isn't that great for the neighborhood, and if we take a neighborhood down a notch, that's a neighborhood in our city that's down a notch. Something that's bad for the neighborhood is not good for the city.
So it would be your preference to have a larger turnaround?
Something that's in reality adequate for fire trucks, and those are long.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hi.
Hi. My name is Linda Gertz. I live a few blocks from the development, the proposed development, and I do want to thank the developer and his representative for having met with some of the neighbors beforehand. I think that willingness and openness speaks well, and we really hope that we will be able to come to a win-win compromise. I know that a lot of folks who come to speak before you have a not-in-my-backyard point of view, and I'd like to suggest, instead of that, a reasonable person point of view about this turnaround issue. As Commissioner Leonard spoke very clearly, 70 feet is not enough, and you don't have to worry about pushing the setback back on homes for a turnaround if the developer is willing to sacrifice a unit or two. Then there can be more room for a turnaround and a little more green space in the space that doesn't have units. As it is, as other people have said, and as I'm sure other people will say, going in on that sharp turn on Lafayette and then a sharp turn back down in 75th is very difficult to do if you're like an old lady who can't drive straight like me, go back and forth and back and forth. And meanwhile, with 19 units, how many cars would there be going in and out of there? 30, 40 just from residents and then service vehicles and so forth. That's really needs more of a space to turn around. So since I can't speak about all those other things, I would just say you are reasonable people. Please apply this reasonable judgment as you would in your own neighborhood for your own backyards. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Sue, would you please call the next three?
Joe Shapiro, Lisa Moyman, Johannes Moyman, and they will be followed by David Dilworth and Kane Ahuna.
My point was already brought up.
Thank you. Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Please state your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Lisa Moyman. I had a little poetic monologue that I was going to share today about aesthetics and green space and all that kind of thing, which I think I would have gotten cut off had I started. So I would just like to make a couple of points regarding what I've heard so far today. Someone may speak more lucidly about this later, but someone on the staff mentioned about the proposal being signed off by the fire department. My understanding from the discussions that I heard is that the fire department signed off on the no turnaround option because they had been instructed that the street would go through. So, but our understanding as a neighborhood is that yes, maybe in 50 years the street may go through, but we're pretty aware that the neighbors that are owning the property that would be slated for said street are adamantly opposed to selling any of that property, so that is so far in the future that no turnaround would very negatively impact not only the people that would live in the development, but all of us around there. So the safety issue with the fire is a huge deal. The presentation of the knuckle-shaped turnaround, the 70-foot turnaround, concerns me because I noticed that the lots in the back where the turnaround is, the houses have all been pushed to the back so that there is no or very little backyard. I would also like to thank Mr. Osterholm for meeting with us neighbors a couple weeks ago, and I would also characterize that as a positive meeting, and we felt that he had a great willingness and declaration of good faith to work with us. So at that meeting, one of the things that we neighbors were happy with was the size of the backyards, because the houses that are proposed to be built there are two-story high houses that are bordering one-story houses. And so a lot of the neighbors were concerned about these monolithic structures looking over into their backyards. it seems like that is a real problem now if the turnaround goes in as suggested. Personally, I believe the solution would be to take out a couple of units so that there is room to actually build an adequate, ample turnaround. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am Jan Moyman, and I live at 3548 Southeast 74th Avenue, directly across the street from the proposed development. This is the second old house that I have restored since I moved into the neighborhood in 1983. I believe that my house will be most adversely affected by the development. The plan calls for a new street to be built, 75th Street, which will be a dead-end street. All of the traffic from the proposed 19 units into and out of the development will pass 5 feet away from my door. Realistically, this will mean 40 to 50 cars, each making 4 to 5 trips a day. And this doesn't even factor visitors and business into the equation. There is virtually no parking designated within the development itself. This means that most cars will park alongside my house and along 74th Avenue. Parking that should be handled within the development itself will become a neighborhood problem as well as my own personal problem. Of additional concerns are lot number 1, 2, and 3, and I understand from today there will be no fire sprinklers in houses on lot number 1, 2, and 3, dangerous for my house. It has stood there since 1874. These lots lack adequate backyards in lot 1, 2, and 3 and could present safety issues for children who will need to play in their front yards where all traffic in and out of the development will pass. Safety issues are not adequately resolved within the development. A turnaround large enough to provide easy access, not just adequate access, for emergency vehicles need to be put in place. All of the potential for problems in this development can be traced back to the essential neighborhood concern, too much density. 19 units equal 19 families. This is far too many people to pack into this space.
And, sir, I need you to, we're here only to make judgment on the turnaround. Again, under the rules provided to us by state law, this is not a hearing on the density or on street parking or anything else.
Okay, then I will conclude with my last remark. I ask that at the very least, 2 units will be removed to provide enough space to create an ample turnaround for fire engines and other vehicles. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Joe Shapiro. And when we signed in today to speak, we had 2 choices, oppose or support. And I'd like to just say I'm in a third choice, which is both, even though I signed up under oppose, because in terms of a turnaround, and if there's going to be a development there, it does need a turnaround. So I support the proposed turnaround. As it relates to the density, I cannot support that relative to pushing back the houses so that there's very little backyard for similar concerns that have been mentioned. So possibly pulling out 1 or 2 units, sacrificing 1 or 2 units now, since this is considered temporary, once connectivity comes through, then those 2 units can be, 1 or 2 units can be put back in by whoever develops it in the future, that type of thing. Also, I was part of the group that met with the developer and that met with Jeremy and with Ken, both who are here today. And again, I felt, too, that this was a positive meeting. There was information presented that we were not aware of. We came away feeling good about it. We went back to the Neighborhood Association, or the minutes were sent back to the Neighborhood Association, and the issue of density raised its head again. And that has been an issue since the very beginning for this development. But again, when we talked with them at that meeting, we felt that we had a positive meeting and there was a willingness to work on both sides. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And again, I just want to remind you that the discussion we have before us is very narrow. It's around the turnaround. We're not here to make a decision on issues related to density. or design those of, and this is the process subscribed to us. So the next three testifiers.
We have one more testifier,
okay.
David Dilworth.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very good. Yes, my name is Dave Dilworth. The main thing I'd like to address is probably the word temporary, and it has been used for temporary turnaround, temporary fence, temporary end of street, and temporary fire protection. The main part is I would like the City Council to address is the word permanent. If we do this under the rules that you have set up and the guidelines, it needs to be permanent. It's always easier to, if you have something permanent, to tear out a street at some future date to extend 75th if that ever happens. And again, I'd like to address the 75th Avenue. At this particular time, after living in the neighborhood, talking with all the people that we have, there is not a chance in a long, long time that that street will ever go through. We own a half acre, a neighbor, or our cousin owns another half acre plus. That's almost an acre. Another lady owns an acre right next to the partial, and they and her daughter are not at all interested either as our kids. So for the long term, something, yes, may happen, but not at this present time. So I think we need to look at a turnaround, a cul-de-sac, not a dead end, the largest that could possibly be to handle all the circumstances that we're going to be running into as a neighbors with this many instant houses. The other thing is on the sprinkling part should definitely send up a red flag to everyone. If we can sprinkler, that may be the new avenue for eliminating the fire department. But I just mainly want to emphasize that we can possibly do the largest thing at this particular time when you have this opportunity to do so, and then we don't have to make changes later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to hear from the Fire Bureau representative if they're in the room. You've heard the discussion about whether this is an adequate turnaround for fire apparatus. I'd like you to speak to that.
Good afternoon. I'm Jim Schwager, supervising engineer for the Fire Marshal's Office. We considered a fire code appeal in looking at the dead end. The dead end is actually about 620 feet from the connection to 74th. The standard is a turnaround is required for any street that is a dead end of more than 300 feet. We have for many years in the Fire Bureau used an option of providing sprinklers in lieu of turnarounds where we feel it makes sense. In this case, we did feel it made sense because it is unlikely that our apparatus would be misdirected onto 75th, that there aren't any other 75th connections in that general area. So we felt that we probably would not be I don't believe any of the maps indicated kind of the neighborhood view. If I may, I'll pass one to the council members here. That we felt that it was unlikely that if we were sent to any other address, we would never use 75th as a connector or Lafayette as a connector, and it would be unlikely for us to be on that street unless we actually had an incident that was reported there. So we felt that this was a case that to assist in the city's goals of density, that we could provide adequate fire service without a turnaround if those homes were sprinklered. Our reasoning is that in a sprinklered home, it does require fire service response, but typically we can do it with much fewer resources, and so we wouldn't be packing in the number of apparatus that we would typically need in a full-on house fire. The 70-foot turnaround, we could not turn even our engines, our smaller apparatus, in the 70-foot. Their turning radius is about 38-foot radius, which which means that we would need probably on the order of 80-foot diameter. Rescues, the ambulance services probably could turn in that, and so an ambulance would not have to turn around. They could get in, make the turnaround, and get out. They would not have to back out, but any of our apparatus would have to back out. And we've done this in a number of difficult development sites in the city. Be available to answer any of your direct questions.
Good to see you here, Jim. I hope you're doing well.
Getting by.
I wanted to ask you, just for my own edification, we're looking at the code language here that the hearings officer cited, and what this says is a turnaround is required on a dead-end street in the following situations. One, the street will serve four or more lots. Two, the street is at least 300 feet long. Or, when required by the city engineer, the Fire Bureau, BDS. So my question is on the first two. It doesn't really seem to give the option of there being a lot of, and I see the BDS. Maybe you want to come up. Go ahead and come on up, Eric. I'm just trying to understand the reasoning or the basis of, and I appreciate the trade-off that you're attempting to give, especially for the reasons that you are, which I very much appreciate. Density and all that is a goal of ours. But how does one find the ability to have the flexibility to not comply with what appears to be pretty straightforward criteria?
If I could just answer that question from the Fire Bureau standpoint. And then the city has many regulations, and our piece is just very limited. The fire code actually establishes the regulations that we apply at a 300-foot limit, but it also provides us the ability to allow alternate methods and materials to accomplish the same objective, which is be able to service those properties safely.
True.
And
but
so
this
for only
to come
the three
out of the code, the city code,
and so
not the fire code.
The city code is Title 31. Actually,
this is actually he's citing Chapter 33.
Okay,
which
and,
is
and
not
so,
you.
Right.
It's you. So I guess that's a better question for you because it doesn't appear to give any.
This goes to the heart of the interpretation issue between what the hearings officer decided and what the Bureau has practiced for a long time, which is that there's a second paragraph that's in addition to that standard that applies to streets that are intended to be through streets that provides the Bureau with the option of doing a temporary turnaround.
Do you have that language for us?
That was in the hearings officer's decision as well, I believe. The standards for turnarounds in the zoning code are in two paragraphs, paragraph A and paragraph B.
Paragraph A, can you just, okay. On the next, on page 17 of his decision.
I'm looking. I don't have his decision in front of me right now, so I'm struggling to find which page it's on. But let me read the code citation, and then I'll see if I can have someone find it in the staff report. There are two paragraphs. One that deals with. Thank you, Catherine. The code has two paragraphs. It has about when a turnaround is required. For a street that is intended to be a dead end, the paragraph you read is true. For streets that are intended to temporarily terminate within the site, there's a separate paragraph that says the decision is up to the Fire Bureau and the city engineer and the Bureau of Development Services.
So I suppose the logical question is how do you define temporary?
Right, and in the land use planning world, our purpose is to be looking towards the future and looking at where the street grid should be over the long haul. And so we're looking at a long-term horizon here, and that's how we've interpreted this code section for many years.